Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're again talking about the Kingdom of God. And we were talking in the last show about opinions. My opinion, your opinion, everybody's got an opinion. Opinion of God, opinion of religion, opinion of what the problem is, opinion of what the problem is not. And we are the problem because we have our opinion, and we think our opinion somehow is right. We want to think that our judgment of what is good and what is evil is right. We want to believe that we can decide what is good and evil, what we can decide what is right. We can't just be given it by our Father. We have to figure it out. And those who study and study and study to show themselves approved often forget to be diligent in the ways of righteousness. And when it's pointed out that they're not so diligent in the ways of righteousness, that they can be impatient, intolerant, angry, judgmental, manipulative. You know, I remember once there were a couple of bullies that were caught me in the woods when I was traveling home from school. I cut across the woods, and they were your young juvenile delinquents. I was in grade school at the time. And they kind of started picking on me and pushing me around. And, you know, I don't give in so easy. I was pretty vain then, too. And I didn't give in to their bullying. And I stood my ground. I wasn't going to bow down. There's a certain, you're supposed to take this position of obeisance, you know, yes and no sir kind of approach to these bullies. And they sense when you're not doing it, and they push the envelope. But they also sense your fear. And so, anyway, it eventually got out of hand, and pushing, coming to shoving and everything, and I was outnumbered, so I ended up breaking away from them. And in my moment of opportunity, I can't remember exactly if you know, I threw something that belonged to one of them, and they went to get it. When they went to get it, I took off through the woods, and this is in the bayous of Houston, and it's thick, viney woods, and I suddenly realized that one of them was chasing me. He was behind me, you know, two steps behind me, trying to make it one. And I kept moving, but I was carrying books, and that was put me at a decided disadvantage in getting away from him. And I stumbled on a stroke of genius. And one of the vines that were crossing the path, you were always ducking and dodging these different vines, and I grabbed one and put it around my neck and held it with my hand and pretended as if it caught me in the throat and choked me, and I fell down and I said, "Oh, my throat! I hurt my throat!" I was just a little bitty kid. And, "Help me! Help me! I hurt my throat!" And the kid got frightened of the fact that I was now actually injured, and he took off running the other way. And I thought, boy, that worked good. He got up and went on home. Seen him the next day in school. They didn't try anything because there were penguins everywhere, if you understand my drift. It was a Catholic school, and there were nuns everywhere, and you didn't start trouble with the nuns around. But So anyway, I thought it was amazing how when they thought I was injured, they gave me power. I actually instilled fear into them when I called for help. Help me, help me, I'm hurt, I'm hurt. Which I wasn't hurt at all. Didn't need any help. Needed to get rid of him, and this was the way I did it, by assuming a position of help. Girls do this all the time. You know, they'll cry. You know, and, you know, the guy's, you know, who was trying to assert himself as a man suddenly now is, you know, a total pansy. Like, oh my gosh, oh, don't cry, you know. Because we can be manipulated. Because we're not in the moment. We're not in the Holy Spirit. We're in the moment, but we're caught in the moment, and we're being washed away by the emotional energies all around us. And we can be manipulated. I mean, they can instill fear in you. They can instill patriotism in you. They can, you know, you can go on YouTube and see the video, Not My Tea Party, that's available at His Holy Church YouTube, or His Church YouTube. And just look up Not My Tea Party. And it's this fellow, Bazo, I think his name was, put this deal on where he dresses up like Thomas Paine and he gives this speech. And when I'm hearing it, I'm saying, my gosh, this is terrible. This is horrible what this guy is saying. He's so manipulative, but he's saying it all in a patriotic fashion, and yeah, we're not going to take it anymore kind of thing. And the number of people I saw on Facebook who saw this that was saying, yes, this is what we need to do and everything. And he was actually telling you to do something that was absolutely the opposite of liberty and freedom. He was leading you straight down the road to bondage, totalitarianism. And he was telling you, you know, like kind of like Mein Kampf, that he was going to take you that way. That you would become a universal servant of the New World Order. I mean, but he didn't use those words. He used kind of a Thomas Paine approach with his little wig and everything. And he got an award from, you know, he got to go to the White House and shake hands with Obama and everything because he had presented this. He was talking about universal service. Everybody being drafted into civilian work corps. All your children belonging to the state. But he was doing it as if he was talking about liberty and the American Revolution and what our forefathers were fighting for, and he was actually delivering you directly into the opposite. And that's what I make those comments in, you know, comment on his video in Not My Tea Party. But the people, because of the emotion in which he was saying it, it was powerful. They didn't listen to the content at all. And here they are now defending the idea of them all and all their children becoming slaves of a totalitarian dictatorship under the guise of patriotism, and everybody was for it. And I said, are you even listening to what he's saying? Well, they're not. They're caught up in the moment. Now, you know, because it was dramatic, and he had this forceful way of speaking. He was an actor. And he sucked you into his story. And you weren't paying attention to the content of what he was saying. I mean, that we see it every time there's an election. The people are sucked into these, dramas and these stories. That's what, you know, political sermons are, political speeches are, is their stories that draw you in. And we'll probably get into, when we start talking about social contracts and some of the philosophers like Locke and Hobbes and that. I put together a number of notes on those guys, and I'll be doing shows on that. But in their opinion of the polis, which is a state, and the psycho, which is the soul, the mind, and what flawed governments are and what kind, you know, philosopher kings. And we've kind of been examining religion. We've done a number of shows on false religion and what religion really means. The definition of religion has fluctuated back and forth between these two definitions. Of one is religion is your opinion of God and how the universe works. And then there's the other religion, which is what you do to fulfill your duty to God and your fellow man. Now, those two definitions, you'll find them both in dictionaries today. But, you know, their juxtaposition as to which one is primary reverses back and forth throughout the ages and through different communities and different, you know, if you went into looking up the word in foreign languages, you'd find the same sort of thing. Because this is the battle, the yin and yang of understanding this relationship of God and man. And of course, religion doesn't have to have anything to do with God if you make your God money. Now, people are talking about an economic recovery. But actually, if you look at the charts, there are more businesses going out of business than going into business. The amount of business is just shrinking. Part of that is consolidation into the power. You know, we're seeing the centralization of the corporate powers of business. Smaller businesses are being driven out of business by larger businesses, like Walmart has driven out hundreds of small local businesses. Now, those local businesses could have easily competed with Walmart, and they would all have, they'd all be prosperous and effective home-run businesses, you know, family-run businesses. But they were too competitive. They were too divided. You know, like my father-in-law ran a lumber yard many, many, many years ago, long before, you know, Home Depot and Lowe's and all this stuff. And he could buy a load of lumber, but he couldn't buy boxcars loads of lumber. He would buy like half a boxcar load of lumber. And so he could only get a certain price because when he negotiated that price, he could only get so much, you know, reduction because he's just a small little competitor. But then you come along with people like Home Depot and Lowe's who buy huge amounts. They can get a really good reduction in price. They can economize on delivery. They can have backhauls, etc. And they can be way more competitive. And you say, well, we can't compete. Well, you could have competed. You know, in our video on, a lot of people watch the video. We have a big long video. It's the only one that's not on the net that I made for a couple of lawyers back in Washington, D.C. when we were presenting the Free Church Report to them. And I think a lot of people see that and they don't really get it. But, you know, I had an uncle who was running Coast to Coast, and the business stayed in business because Coast to Coast is kind of a franchise. Even though there were these other competitive businesses that were coming in and squeezing them out because of the fact that they had, you know, there were national and international connections and they could get better prices. And but they stayed afloat because they were a franchise. But the reality is that if everybody in the hardware store business got together and had hardware store business conventions and actually got together in the formulation, they could have created buying clubs that would have had more clout than Walmart and even the franchises like Coast to Coast. But they have to work together. And they know that, okay, now I'm only going to order, you know, like if it's a lumber yards, that I'm only going to order a half a truckload of lumber. But if I create a consortium of other lumber yards, we all get together and we order together, we can get the same price as Home Depot and Lowe's. And then we use, you know, we franchise with a trucking company that's going to deliver and do the backhauls and everything so that they run a successful trucking business. But they know that when the consortium, the buying club of lumber yards, buys this lumber, they're going to buy 20 boxcar loads or 20 truck loads. And they're going to buy it through this network of lumber yards and get the good price and then redistribute it at a set rate, negotiated rate, so that the trucking company, which is another family-owned business, that is actually probably a series of family-owned trucks working together also in a cooperative. And you could compete against Walmart and Home Depot and Lowe's. And you would all be successful. But you have to come together and not argue and not be greedy and not be selfish. And you can make a success of that. And you could compete against these big mega corporations. And if I think it's called Dragon. I can't even remember. I keep thinking Pendragon, but that's not correct. But cooperative in Spain. I think if you look up Cooperative of Spain and the word dragon, the dragon may not be all of the name, but it's multi-billion-dollar cooperatives. And they formed them because they had to, because banks wouldn't come into the community and because they were so poor. It's the poorest area of Spain. And now, during the recession, it's done better than almost any other areas of Spain because they have this residue left over for when they had to come together to even survive economically because they were so poor. And see, what made America great is when it came here is people gave up everything and they learned to work together to form communities, and community was core, and family was core in communities. And they understood that. But now we've gone away from it. We've become a socialist nation. And that grace that came to us through the magic of cooperation and brotherly love is now fading away. And one of the chief culprits in this division of the individual is religion. And the fact that we make our opinion what we are worshiping rather than really the truth. You see, the person who told me says, well, I know the truth. Well, no. You know your opinion of the truth. It may be true. It may not be true. You need to question it. I certainly question it. But you need to question your opinion of the truth all the time. Otherwise, you stop seeking. When you think you have the truth, you're not seeking. Seeking is part of the message. You know, he says, seeking you shall find, but then what about the next moment? What's the truth for the next moment? You have to seek that too. In every moment, you have to be seeking the truth. It's the journey is the message. If you got it already, you're God. You've got the truth. You don't have the truth. You have an idea about the truth. You see, it's really kind of a, you know, a heady thing to get around to. But anyway, someone was suggesting that religion should be scientifically studied. And he goes on and on and on about, you know, this, you know, religion and how it comes about and where these ideas came from and all of this stuff. But he's always defining religion as an opinion of who God is and our relationship with God and all this stuff. But it's an opinion. It's not what you do. Yet, you know, like I show Bouvier's and other dictionaries, just not 200 years ago, primary definition of religion is the fulfillment of your duty to God and your fellow man. And of course, according to Jesus, part of your duty is to feed my sheep. But see, once you shifted your definition over to religion is my opinion of who God is and what he believes and all this kind of stuff, then now you're outside of what you have to do. And that's why we have this primary false doctrine of there's nothing you can do to be saved. Well, if you're not a doer of the word, that's evidence that you're not saved. It's not what you do that saves you. It's not what I do that brings about the kingdom. It's about, you know, what brings about the kingdom in my life is my personal surrender that I can't figure it out. I've told that story. When I finally started to realize that, and I have to do that every day and every moment, realize that I can't figure it out, that only God can figure it out, because he's the only one who really knows the truth. He's the only one who really has the truth. And I can receive that truth from him as if I were eating of the tree of life. But if I'm going to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, in other words, worship my opinion, hold up my opinion, seek to find other people who will accept my opinion, then I'm not going to be eating of the tree of life. You see, and we all do this. We all have our opinion, you know, about the feast days and the second coming and, you know, different, you know, dispensation theologies and what have you. And they're all flawed because they're in our heads. Now, there may be some truth in all of them, and the great deception has lots of truth in it. But you see, truth is in the moment. How you react in the moment. Do you know how to handle the moment because you ate of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil? Or do you know how to handle the moment because you're living in the moment, eating of the tree of life? Wow, that's a big difference. So anyway, philosophers talk about religion too. And they talk about government. And of course, the Bible talks about government far more than it talks about religion. But religion, again, is what you do to fulfill your duty to God and your fellow man, which is your duty to your fellow man is part of your duty to God. So religion is how you do that. So, and government is often what you rely on to get that done. In other words, you have a duty to love your neighbor, to help out your neighbor, to be kind to your neighbor, to support your neighbor when he needs help. You have a duty to do that. And how you do that is your religion. Now, most people have the religion of the world, which they do it by forcing their neighbors to contribute to a central authority, a corporate central authority, who then redistributes for the welfare of the people. That's one religion. There's another religion that has a corporate body that cannot force the offerings of the people. The people must freely sacrifice, and then they handle the social welfare of society through free will offerings and the perfect law of liberty. So these are the only two religions there are. One is going one direction, one is going the other. One is going towards Rome and totalitarianism, and the other one is going towards the kingdom of God and the liberty of Christ. So now, which one are you formulating? If you're formulating the one that Christ formulated, you would be gathering together, picking the most, the wisest amongst you, the most tender-hearted yet able to say no, tough love, individual, and then you support them and they make sure that the needy of your society are taken care of. Not just the needy of your personal congregation, but the needy of society and even the strangers in your midst when they need help. But how they help is very different, you know, because you could have somebody who helps somebody and weakens them and somebody who helps and that strengthens them. You know, teach a man a fish, give a man a fish. Difference. But anyway, Plato, he talked about this philosopher kings, this love of wisdom rather than power that was needed in a republic in order to sustain liberty in that society and sustain that society itself. So the philosopher kings are the antithesis of ruler kings. Their philosophy being life, philo, actually love of life almost, because philio is one of the words that we see translated into love. So these kings of love and service rather than kings of power and control. So he says you need that. Well, that's really what the Levites were when they were called out to serve, not rule, but serve the people through faith, hope, and charity. And they served the tabernacles, the tents of the congregations. And they did so with the free will offerings of the people. This was the government of God on earth. This is how it operates. Now, the government of Cain forces the contributions of the people, divides the community because they don't develop the relationship of people who are actually giving amongst themselves. And this is how the world operates. So people, talk about, Federal Reserve and, birth certificates and all these kinds of things that are supposedly creating bondage. What they need to be preaching is charity, faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. Because unless you turn around spiritually and start getting back to the ways of Christ, it doesn't matter whether somebody frees you from the Federal Reserve or the New World Order or whatever these catchphrases you have for the enemy. Again, you are the enemy. In order to defeat the enemy, you must surrender to the ways of Christ. You have to start serving one another. Every elder in your congregation needs to be serving not only the people in their congregation, but the people in the next congregation. This is why there was a tithing. This is why they were giving. Because without giving, there can be no receiving. And if we don't understand that, we have produced a flawed government. Any government that forces the contributions of the people, like Saul did, is a flawed concept of the government. It is a flawed government. Polis, the state, the people, who don't take care of one another through faith, hope, and charity, should be in bondage. It should be collateral for debt for the Federal Reserve. They should not be set free because they still have lessons to learn in the moments they are given. Their psychology is not, their minds are not the minds of those who should be free in Christ. So what do governments do? They create democracies and different kinds of governments. And we'll talk about that when we return to Keys of the Kingdom after a brief break.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our lives seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. And you've heard me talk about democracies many times, and Plato talked about democracies, and he said it was the worst form of government except for tyranny. And what democracy really is the tyranny of the many. The majority rule. They rule over their neighbor. And you really don't want to be in a collective of Cains who want to rule over you. And that's what a democracy almost always ends up being, because people who don't want to rule over their neighbor have no interest in democracy. And what was it? Ronald Reagan said something about communism only works in heaven and in hell or something, or socialism only works in heaven and in hell. Heaven, they don't need it, and hell, they already have it, or something to that effect. Well, democracy is pretty much the same way, except for the fact that democracies lead to totalitarianism. Karl Marx thought democracies lead to socialism, and socialism leads to communism. And, like I said, until sometime in the 30s, democracy was almost always defined as a bad form of government. Now it's what we fight for. And this becomes such a delusion that people think that a republic is an indirect democracy, where you elect representatives and they rule over you. And we think that that's what it is because that's what we got. And we think we're still a republic. And the reality is that we're a democracy in a republic, and it's an indirect democracy. And it's a bankrupt indirect democracy. But Plato was talking about democracies would produce leaders who are popular and look good. He said that that's what, because they were going to be seeking popularity. That's how they get elected, is they get popular with the people. And of course, the caliber of the people who talk about this, even Plato, caliber of the people is determined by the character of their souls. You know, it's not that, you know, they talk about the content of his character. Well, how do we measure the content of somebody's character? Isn't it by their virtues as opposed to their vices? Well, society is also measured in the same way. Plato thought that democracies would produce leaders who pandered to the people with short-term solutions because the people, you know, they can't think far in the future. And people who don't study history can't think in the future at all because they don't know anything about the past. They have no frame of reference. He also thought that democratic leaders would be reluctant to ask the people for sacrifice. I mean, they do it, but they are reluctant. And really, democratic leaders are reluctant to ask anything. They tell their rulers. They were elected. In direct democracy, the leaders are elected to rule, to be lawmakers. They're not representatives. They're lawmakers. See, people don't make that connection. They say, well, no, we're just electing representatives. But they also call them lawmakers. And they think, well, yeah, well, that's why we elect them, to make our laws. But the fact is, that isn't a republic. A republic, it's the laws written on your hearts and on your minds. A pure republic. You don't write them down on paper and then impose them on everybody else. But see, that's what we've done with our religions. That's what we've done. And our religion now has become government. And that government is ruling over you because collectively the people decided to rule over their neighbor. Collectively, they got the Cain syndrome. Collectively, they have established the mark of Cain upon their own heads because they consented to the idea that they have a right to rule over their neighbor. They have a right to covet their neighbor's goods. That's the mark of Cain. And you can go read our article at Preparing You on Mark of Cain. I just added to it a little bit this morning, building upon this explanation, because people have such a difficult time in seeing it because they have their opinion. They already have their opinion. They don't need, you know, the truth. They have their opinion of the truth. And if you bring along a truth that is contrary to their opinion, oh, woe is you, you heretic. You must be a lunatic or a fool because you don't agree with my opinion. You have a different opinion. And I almost always take the different opinion. You know, if we agree on 100 things, I'm going to bring up that one thing what we don't agree on. I'm going to bring up the 101 thing. The thing that we don't agree on. Because that's how you create the bonds of relationship, is dealing with our differences. You know, where we're already the same, we're already the same. And actually, we're not as much the same as we'd like to think. But that's because we have created religion, or what we is posing as religion, in the idea of our opinion of religion. That religion is our opinion. And so we hold up this opinion, and we have churches that will give us, you know, a doctrinal statement, a line of doctrines. Believe this, believe this, believe this, believe this, believe this, and you're in. And, you know, the ideas like that, you know, that's why at His Holy Church, which is not a location, it's wherever people are gathering in His name, in His character, it has one doctrine. If the church was established by Christ for His purposes and for the propagation of His doctrine, then it's His doctrine. We have no other statements in our doctrine other than His statements. Now, we have lots of opinions about what He meant, but they are as numerous as the people. And there is our opinions, and my opinion, and your opinion, and there's God's opinion. God's opinion is the truth. You don't have God's opinion. He does. You may conform to it, but you don't have it. Anyway, Democratic leaders would be reluctant to ask for sacrifices, but they're not real reluctant about forcing sacrifices, but they have to do something to create their popularity. So they'll say, well, we're going to need to increase this tax to fight the war, to make the world safe for democracy, to, you know, save these people that are being brutalized by these bad Hessian Huns who are going around stomping on Europe. So we're going to need to have a tax to support that war. And then it goes for all kinds of other things. Plato says democratic systems are more involved with image than substance. And that is absolutely true. That image is everything. Because, see, it's all idolatry. You have to create this image. Everybody says, oh, I love that. I'll fight for that. I'll even die for that image. But that image is your idol. That's your collective opinion. And it's often worded in such a way that it allows a lot of people who don't really agree to say that we all agree on this. But they don't really agree on that, but it's so vague. You know, I agree that we should be free. But what is that? What's free? You know, there's a lot of libertarians that talk about freedom, and they just want the license to do wicked things, to be selfish, you know, the license to be evil even, and to use one another. I don't want to put all libertarians into that, but there's an element of libertarians that are absolutely amoral. You know, the fact that they're libertarian is just, that's just going to draw the amoral that says anything goes. You know, so libertarian in itself is a very general term. I mean, you can have libertarians that are wicked, evil people, and you have libertarians that are pretty decent folks. Because it's not that defining. It means, you know, it's a pretty general idea. What's hard to find in a democracy, according to Plato, is shared values. You see, because in order to have shared values, there must be kind of an interconnection of individuals on a daily basis where values are expressed and are used to motivate that relationship in the moment. They have to they have to interact. It's the iron sharpening iron to come up with shared values. Democracies don't have that. Democracy is about what I can get. It's about, you know, how I can get others to serve what I need. You know, can I get enough people to vote this levy in because I think we need a bigger school? I need, my son is going to swim meets and the pool is not Olympic size, and we need to have a tax levy so we can have an Olympic size pool because my son is on the swim team. And so therefore he forces all his neighbors to contribute so they can have this levy to, so that he can have this pool in the school. Now, it can be things less wasteful or less obviously pandering to your own desires. You can say, we want good education. You know, I mean, the teachers are all saying we need better salaries to bring in better teachers, which is all you're saying is we need more money to hire more mercenaries who are not really interested in teaching and sharing. They're interested in pensions and health care and high salaries and 3 months off a year, you know, on and on and on and on. But anyway, in a democracy, the actual community shared values become less and less. And you don't even need to know your neighbor on your street, you know, because the government's taking care of everything. So, you know, what do I care about my neighbor? You see, in a real pure republic, your neighbor is essential because your neighbor is part of the government. It's a government of the people, for the people, and by the people. Democracy is a government where the people elect somebody else to be the government. You see, you know, it's one of the things I pointed out we've added to our anarchist page this week because of Ron Paul making some statements about anarchism not being a bad thing. Anarchy, a lot of people think anarchy means no government. No, anarchy means no archy. Anarchy. Archy is those who exercise authority in over others. But in an anarchy, you exercise authority, but only over yourself. It's still government. But you learn to govern yourself. And you learn to walk together in voluntarism and free will offerings. Now we're talking about what Israel used to be. Israel was a theocratic anarchy. There was no authority, no one out there making new laws. There was a law, Ten Commandments. No punishments are ascribed with the Ten Commandments. They're guideposts saying if you don't keep these commandments, you're off the track and you're headed for trouble. If you're murdering people, if you're coveting one another's goods, you're not following the commandments of God. And of course, no country is, because they all covet their neighbor's goods through their democracies and socialist states and their communist governments. So anyway, he's saying that when you start creating those democracies, you start losing the shared values of individuals, because individuals don't have to interact. I mean, you go to a political convention, suppose like a Republican political convention, and you have shared values. We're all Republicans. And half the candidates are more Democrats than they are Republicans. So they don't really have shared values. You know, like Cain. Was it McCain? Excuse me. McCain. Or I guess it was a Cain and a McCain. But anyway, they didn't have the same values. But they were for the same party. So parties don't really have the same values. Individuals have the same values. And so how do you get to that point? We are so far away from a free government, we don't even know anymore. A free society. You leave the government out of it. In a free society, the people govern themselves according to certain virtues. So what happens without those shared values, the people of a democracy are less willing to sacrifice for the common good, seeking to go their own way because their value is what they want. He said there would be a rise in crime in democracy. Yep, certainly is. There'll be a separation of generation, old and young, in a democracy. Even without public education, there will be a separation of age groups and generations. Even without Social Security, there would be a separation of generations, old and young. There would be, the young will disregard the values of the elderly because their values are what's important. Their opinion is what's important. So, of course, this also separates communities and its members. So you will live in a block and you won't even hardly know your neighbors. You won't know what their values are. You don't know what they consider to really be important. And part of that is religion, because they have held up, what's important is that we're all Jews, or important that we're all Messianic Jews, or important is that we're all Democrats or other religions like Republicans or, you know, Constitutionalists. Those are all religions. Political religions, but they're religions because it's about your opinion of what you think moves the universe. So that's a part of your religion. Because it's also part of your religion in how you take care of the needy of your society. But it's all part of one religion that operates to do this not by faith, hope, and charity, but by you know, all your Republicans are supposed to be not socialists, okay? I think there are a bunch of Republicans who profess themselves to be socialists. But the reality is 90% of the Republicans send their kids to public schools, and public schools is socialism. So if you want to know more about that, go see our series on education. Well, another thing that I thought was really interesting is that Plato thought that democracy would produce a succession of fads and fashions. You see, because they have no standard, you know, that goes from generation to generation of morality, because generations are separated. I don't care what my dad did. You know, he's an idiot. You know, and you wonder why your kids think you're idiots. Well, you send them to public school. That was a statement in itself that you weren't smart enough to teach them. But anyway, he thought that a democracy would produce this succession of fads and fashions. And, of course, that's one of the ways, you know, they separate the old from the young. And my dad, he's so square. You know, I'm going back to the old language. I'm sure they have another language for it. But he's not hip like us. Fads and fashions. And why is this? Because there is no common values. People don't have to develop those common values. That was one of the things when I went to the seminary and discovered that many of my teachers didn't have the same values as me. I would have never discovered that had I not gone to the seminary. I would have kept clipping along in private school thinking that everybody does have. I don't know if I would have never realized it, but I certainly hadn't realized it before, that these guys are saying the exact same words that I'm saying, but they have different values. They interpret it differently. So common values, the only way that comes is from common interaction. And almost immediately, one of the first things that will be required to continue in developing those common values is forgiveness. Which means that people cannot just run off when somebody has a different opinion. If you're leaving a group of people because somebody has a different opinion, especially over something that doesn't actually injure anybody, they just have a different opinion about how they do things, and you're running off, separating yourself from that person, it's you probably worship your opinion. And their opinion is different, so therefore you have to disfellowship them. Very clear, Paul talks about why you turn away from certain people. And that has to do with backbiting. And, you know, there's a whole list in there. We'll look it up and we'll go through it. But I'm running out of time, so we won't go into that right now. Just stay focused on this no common values, and the only way to get that is interaction. And that first thing that's going to be required in that interaction is forgiveness. That's right, forgiveness. And giving. You're going to have to give. You're going to have to, you know, call it tithe, call it contribute, whatever it is. You're going to have to take money out of your pocket, blood out of your arms, time out of your day, and give it up for somebody else. And give it up for somebody as far away from you as you can give it up. Let go of it entirely. You know, I mean, like you go over and help somebody, you know, there's kind of an emotional, like you owe me because I helped you. And you can't hardly resist it. I know your motivation may be good, generally speaking, but you will be tempted to think that I helped you out and this is the way you talk to me. This is what you do. I came and helped you and you treat me like this. Well, then it wasn't quite freely given, was it? Now that we're complex people, so yeah, a lot of it was freely given, but there was these strings attached. And you are the ones that need to cut those strings. Don't make the other guy cut your strings, because then he will disfellowship you. You cut the strings. You don't owe me anything. I just recently saw the recent movie, A Great Expectation, with Helen Bottom Carter. There's, you know, we've watched them way back with the old ones and everything. We think it's a great story, and there's a number of different versions of it out, but the one with Helen Bottom Carter, the guy who plays Joe, ends up paying all the debts of Pip, and Pip says, I'm going to pay you back. And he says, you know, don't worry about it. And then he says, I'm going to work and I'm going to pay you back. And Joe says, enough, Pip. You know, he gave it willingly. He let go. You don't owe me anything. You know, now Pip may think, well, yeah, I still do owe you. But that's in Pip's heart. It's not in Joe's heart. There's no debt in Joe's heart. Joe let go. You don't owe me anything. Now, as you see, when you give into a congregation and you let go, and then they don't have the same opinion that you have about something, you have to forgive them their opinion. You see, you're operating in a spiritual realm. You're seeing it physically manifested, you know. But you have to be operating in this spiritual realm. And I see so many people coming together, and they want you to have their opinion. They want you to use their words. They want you to follow their rituals, their ceremonies, what they consider a value. Where's love? Other than the love of your opinion. The love of your idea of religion. You know, and go find in there where Paul talks about from such turn away. Read what he's talking about, those that we should turn away from, get away from. It's not simply for having a different opinion. You know, we have to work at developing those relationships. So anyway, next time we may be talking about social contracts, flawed states in effect, but we'll have to wait till next time. Until then, may peace be upon your house, and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.